out to LA. New ad. Love part two.
One time.
To live in time, LA. West side. West side. West side. To live and die in L.A., where everybody try to fatten their pocket. So many hustle for the cash, so it's hard to knock it. Everybody got their own thing, currency chasing. Worldwide through the hard times, worrying faces. Shed tears as we bury brothers close to heart. What was a friend, now a ghost in the dark.
Well, hello, hello, hello. God bless you, community family. And welcome to Gang Talk Radio Online. And bless your hearts if you're listening. We're so happy that you are, because we feel like this is a critical conversation that the Black Nation must have with ourselves. So that's the reason we're here.
Right.
Because of the prices that we paid, because we've been walking around in darkness for a little while here, and it's time to wake up, wake up, wake up, and join us in our recovery from the nightmares we've been subjected to. So, once again, God bless you, and thank you for listening to this very specific hour. And as is our custom, we are so happy that Skip Townsend is our co-host, because he is such a street soldier and doing amazing things that not enough of our community know about. So God bless you, Skip, and thank you for being the co-host of this special hour.
Well, thank you, Sister Heron. As always, I give all honor and praise to God. I'm just truly grateful to be able to be a co-host. I'm grateful to be alive and well and to have my right mind, my legs, my arms, and my right way of thinking. So just truly grateful to be here. Thank you, Sister Heron, as well.
You know, you started out with the right thing, back in your right mind.
Yes.
See, because we can live without an arm, a leg, a foot, an ear. But without that mind, we really are lost. So it's a blessing to have you in full recovery and working to help us pull ourselves back from the brink of extinction.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes. So it's our custom to thank our guest. And, you know, I'm not sure you were listening last week, because everybody's eyes were on Prince. Bless his heart. He passed away a week ago today. And it was devastating for everybody I know.
Right.
Even people I don't know. So when we left the studio, just trying to get through our usual business, we walked right up the street to Leimert Park and met our community there to celebrate our hero that left us, which has become our custom to do. Right here in our own community, we celebrate our heroes.
Right.
And what amazed me was how many people, see, we treat them like they belong to us.
Right.
And rightfully so. It's okay. I'm not apologizing for that. But what surprised me was how many people went downtown.
Mm.
They had an outpouring of people that went downtown to acknowledge this entertainer. And it was hundreds of them. Right. Hundreds of them. And I thought, well, that's nice.
Right.
That's nice. We have to share his genius with the world, because the world loved him. Mm-hmm. And one of the other things I saw that I actually posted on Facebook was how many people did a tribute to him in the sing a Prince song video.
Right.
A little white girl, some white guys, and they were singing Prince songs with all the feeling.
Right.
And it was just so cute that I had to post it, because we all adored him. Prince, like Michael Jackson, like Whitney Houston, you know, all of our entertainers, Maurice White,
right,
you know, Natalie Cole, all these people mean so much to us, because they represent success
right.
that a lot of our community never get to see. So
right.
We applaud them. We
yes,
honor
indeed.
Them.
Yes, indeed, Sister. Also, Barry White, who comes from
Barry.
South Central L.A.,
yes.
Luther Vandross, who made a major impact in the music industry.
Yes.
But the one thing about Prince that I want to say that separates him from a lot of the other singers, I mean, of course, his genius, comparable to Stevie Wonder's, but
yes.
his off-camera things that he did.
Yes.
And there's so many people coming forward now saying, now I'm able to tell that Prince gave me so much money to put solar panels on people's homes in
right.
San Francisco and Oakland.
Right.
And he, you know, there's a guy, Byers, I forgot his first name, but Mr. Byers said that Prince would call him and say, hey, I have an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he would send him money and say, I need solar panels on these people's houses
mm-hmm.
who live next to the beach
yeah.
in San Francisco and stuff. So he would create something to put those solar panels on. And people right now to this day have no idea that was Prince's idea and Prince money that made it happen.
Right.
And he said that was just one example, but there were other things that he did. Right. He was also linked to a relationship building with Michael Jordan and Nike. And I'm thinking, wow, you know, how did that happen?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's so many people coming forward now saying, hey, look, Prince didn't want any credit, but these are the things that he did for the community.
And his religion precluded him from publicizing that, okay? And he respected his faith, and we respect him for that. But the most profound story I have about Prince is Van Jones, an up-and-coming, educated, young black man. And the first time I saw Van, he was doing a Tavis Smiley 10-year anniversary on the State of the Black Nation. And Van Jones was part of the panel. And that brother was so eloquent in talking about, you know, our condition, our circumstances, our lack, and the direction we need to be moving. So Van presented himself as the next up-and-coming, you know, for black representation.
Right.
He got a job at the White House, okay, because the president obviously was impressed with Van. But the powers that be just didn't like that, so they did whatever they had to damage Van Jones's image to force him out of that White House job. And so you can imagine, as hard as he worked, and then to lose it so deceitfully and backstabbish, that's really what they did, but that's typical White House politics, not White House, Washington politics. But in any case, they drove him out of that job, and Van was devastated. He was devastated as a black man that's worked hard. You know how that is, to have somebody just snatch that success from you. Well, Prince called him. Prince called him. Prince knew that Van had been burned, and Van was in a dark hole. And he asked Van, he actually told Van, you know, I heard you, brother. I heard the things that you want to do. Let's see if we can partner together and make some of that happen. So Prince actually rescued Van from the pits and put him to work. And that's how we had those $25 a ticket concert seats at the Forum.
Right.
Prince and Van Jones put that together, and they went around the country doing these cheap ticket concerts for our community. And how many people know that that was the motivation behind it? So we could talk about Prince for a whole hour, but we're not here to talk about Prince, but we will be talking about Prince until it's all set.
Right.
All right.
So, but you never mentioned the name of our guest last week, because we went off into Prince. So who was our guest last week?
Our guest was George Holt, bless his heart. He's a former public housing authority officer.
Right.
So he worked out, as he said, in Nickerson Garden, Jordan Downs, Imperial Court, and we teased him about haciendas being too small.
I just want y'all to know I always advocate for the haciendas.
Yes, you do.
They're not that small.
We're not trying to leave anybody out of this equation. No. So let's just thank George for coming last week. It was a very difficult hour.
Yes.
Very difficult hour. My mind really wasn't in it, but we did the best we could. So tonight we're on a real serious, serious note. And we're here to talk about drugs and drug addiction and the nightmare of what it did to the black nation. So I'm going to allow our guests, since this is their first time online, to go ahead and introduce themselves.
Okay, how you doing? My name is Terrence. And it's always an honor and pleasure. I want to thank you guys for inviting me back on Gang Talk. Especially to talk about a topic, drugs and alcohol addiction. And I brought a friend of mine, who's now a friend of mine, a man who took me through the recovery process, though.
Wonderful.
When I was in darkness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. My name is Rodney, better known as Double R. And I'm out of Watts via Nickerson Gardens.
Okay.
And I lived in triple darkness for a long time until I was able to go into a treatment facility and learn what I'm up against via the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And now that's what I do, is I take other people through the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, because people is in the dark on what they really up against.
Right.
And we can sit here and talk about drug addiction, but until you know the truth about drug addiction, you know, you're still in the fog.
Right.
Drug addiction comes from me saying that I want it. No one has pushed it on me. Then it become a habit to where I can't escape from it. Right. You know, then I go on to the bitter end to get what I need, just to be happy, you know.
Right. And you're not really happy.
No.
You're just chasing that. You're just chasing a thing because your addiction is driving you to do that.
Yes.
You know, so we really wanted to get in that conversation in detail because here on this show, we allow our guests to tell what they feel comfortable in sharing with us.
Okay.
You're under no pressure to admit anything other than what you feel comfortable about. And since we are talking about drugs and addiction, as a black nation, I want to focus on the crack virus.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, because that's the single thing that changed our script.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm going to say for history purposes that it's been coming out recently of how long we've been targeted for the drug market. And recently it's come out that as far back as Richard Nixon's administration, drugs were targeted or earmarked for the black community. And so I'm not laughing, but I am asking that kind of distinction because Nikki Barnes and Frank Lucas were quite successful in distributing heroin through Harlem.
Right.
And I have disregard for Frank because he had no remorse. And what distresses me more than that is that he thought he was doing all right because he was making the money in exchange for what he was creating. He thought giving away free turkeys would make that board even. You see, so we had a lot of casualties, a lot of broken families, and, you know, for him to have money, okay, to be prominent in his neighborhood, to be respected.
Well, Sister Heron, I don't want to take up for him. I definitely don't want to advocate for him, but I want to say that the pharmaceutical companies here in the United States have been doing the same thing to all of us,
yes,
and they have not been discriminatory. Well, they will attack the white families, the Hispanic family, and the black, and they make billions of dollars,
well,
and they won't even give us a turkey.
Okay. All right, look, see, because you know pharmaceuticals is a whole different arena that my nation didn't really have a chance to get caught up in. Our nightmare came from crack, not right. pharmaceuticals, okay? And pharmaceuticals didn't change our script and set up gang wars.
But it is
wars.
Now.
Presently, it is.
We're
right
going to get
today.
To right. the pharmaceuticals at another time, but we're talking right. about what changed the black nation. And that was a crack epidemic. And I call it the Black Plague because it kills so many of us that we don't know what pharmaceuticals have actually done and contributed. You know, so we try to be fair and apologize for our guest arriving a little bit late. But
can I intervene on
yes,
what
please.
You're saying?
This is an open conversation.
We blame folks, right? But the game. It's all in the game and power, right? When people go into the game, they don't care who they hurt. It's about the money, you know?
We're just moving microphones around for a second, but finish your thought.
It's really all about power in the game, mm-hmm. you know? And really the game is to be sold and not told, but power. Everybody wants to have power.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter who get hurt when you play in the game.
Well,
you know,
I can't simplify it like that. See, because I'm looking at the casualties from that game. And mm-hmm. for you to say a game is a disrespect to those that have died because of it, been incarcerated because of it, are addicted now to this day because of it. You see, the hopelessness that it heaped on our community, we're still trying to survive and come out from under that.
Right. See, but the thing is, sister, real quick, the thing is that we are a target no matter... I don't know if you can hear me or not, but
okay,
we are a target regardless of whether it is by Frank Lucas,
mm-hmm.
we are a target whether it's by corporate America. We are the target. So Frank Lucas was a vehicle. I want to use him like a truck. And
yeah.
that's what they did, like they
yeah.
did Freeway Rick.
Right.
They used him,
like a truck.
To move
yeah.
Drugs through the community. So that's only a vehicle. There's a bigger picture, which is the corporate America, which
wow.
allows it, the Contra scandal, the things that were going on. Bush was in charge of that.
Yes.
Reagan's in charge. And,
yes.
and there's so many different people who target us. And believe me, to this day, they're still targeting us.
Yes.
And they are are hiding their hands. They're the ones throwing the rock and hiding their hand. We have meth in our community now, which we didn't have at first. That was something for people in San Bernardino or Riverside and different cultures, but now we have it prevalent in our community. We just talked about offline. We talked about the guy who's a bad hooker. He can't talk. Not that he's a bad rapper. He can't talk. He's on so much lean, you know, because of the drugs that they're putting in the community. They right down the street. You know, lean is right here. Right. Okay. But I can go outside and get some right now. Okay. So that's how horrible that is in our community.
This is really what I want to talk about, that drug culture that was brought in by way of Los Angeles. We kind of opened the door because we didn't know what was coming to us. We had no idea. We just saw the money.
Yes.
We just saw the money. And that money was just bum rushing at us, just heaping us. You see, the guest that I was expecting, bless his heart, started out with Freeway Ricky. Freeway Ricky was only 16. The guest that I was looking for was 13. Mm-hmm. And they were partners. And you see, one of them ended up with 40 cars because of this. At a young age, not even 21 yet, to make rational decisions. So the attack was real. That's all I'm validating. The attack on us was real.
Yes.
The problem is, when you think who the attacker was, what you gonna do about the government? What are black folks gonna do about the government? Absolutely nothing. So we have to talk amongst ourselves and figure out what we gonna do to help ourselves. So that's what this is about. I'd love to get after those responsible, but we know that when Maxine came out and wanted to talk about how that crack was flowing in the LA community, somebody came and told her to shut up. And that's what she did.
Well, that's bless her heart. Did.
Well, see, when they threaten you like that, if you watch Scandals.
Well, here's the thing. If I'm not willing to die for what I truly believe in, which is my people, then I have no business saying nothing in the first place. Yeah.
Well, you know, and in fairness to her, Maxine has sacrificed her whole political career to work for her people until that moment when they told her, you will shut up about this, because she wanted to go into detail, where did it come from, who was responsible. That was in the Reagan years,
right,
in the Reagan administration with George Bush Sr. and Oliver North. So we only have bits and pieces of that story, but nobody to fight that battle.
Well, we have the people who are still here. We got Freeway Rick. We got Chico Brown. We got Cornell Ward. We have the people who were deeply involved in that. Chico Brown went to prison with Freeway Rick.
Yeah.
So and Cornell Ward was one of the ones from the beginning, like you said.
Yeah.
So we have people who are still prevalent during that time. We can tell our story, but are we scared to tell it?
Well,
are we scared to tell the truth? Matter of fact, I get now what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
Tell a story.
Yeah.
Come on, let's talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, let's talk
let's get
about
it,
out. It. See, because as I said, Freeway is still a political prisoner.
Yes.
And there's some things that he just cannot talk about without getting himself jammed up again. So
right,
we kind of leave Freeway out of that conversation because his lips are kind of tied. But he has come out with a movie, we had hoped, Cornell Cracking the System.
Right.
That talks about how the drugs were funneled into our community and who funneled them and what the consequences. So if you want to know the full story, you got to go watch that movie.
Right.
But Gang Talk is not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the issue. So Terrence, I invited you to come and lead this. So I want you to go ahead and introduce our guest here.
I lay Freak right here. Introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Francis.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Francis.
Francis look 15. Francis, what do you know about drugs?
She does look
I know that they could destroy your life. You know, that's what I do know about drugs, and I do know that they have a evil power, you know?
Hey, don't stop.
Well,
you're on a roll.
I actually see, because we have to be real serious about this. We have a baby in the studio,
baby,
and I think she wants to say something for her mommy and daddy, because she's happy that she has both of them around.
Right,
and we are, too.
Yes,
because our recovery is the issue at hand.
Right.
Okay. And the truth is, L.A. was a test, okay, for the cartels. I'm just going to say it like that. They were tests for the cartels. Can we bring these drugs into the country and distribute them?
Right.
And they found out through the Crips and Bloods, yes, we can.
Right.
Not only can we can spread them all the way across the country.
Right.
So they succeeded so well through us that now they've dug tunnels.
Right.
Okay, they're not bringing them in by boat anymore or truck across the border. They have spent millions of dollars to dig tunnels into this country.
Yes.
So what are they bringing? Meth, heroin.
Yes.
I'm not sure if it's even crack, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Cocaine.
And
okay.
weed. Cocaine and weed, yes. So, right. you know, it's a big business. And
yes,
all we're trying to do, we're not trying to lay blame. We're trying to wake our people up mm-hmm. so they understand the trick is coming our way.
Right.
Okay, and don't get caught up.
Right.
We're in recovery now.
You guys saying that they're bringing meth in. You know, you can find meth up under your bathroom sink.
Right.
Drano.
But
that kind of stuff, you can make that stuff
right. They're making it out in San Bernardino, Riverside. Matter of fact, there was a report that said Riverside County was the home of the meth labs.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah.
You know, so it don't have to come from Mexico. We got them homegrown.
But the point is, they have those tunnels.
Right.
They've invested a lot of money to bring those drugs into America
right.
undetected. You
right.
see, and they're just now finding these tunnels, and they found at least 12.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed.
All right. So,
well, yeah, I've been listening, and I would love to blame the government and others for the condition I placed myself in, but now I know better than to do that. I'm saying that because, as a whole, the condition in the state that we're in, the poverty state, even not having to be in poverty, just looking at TV that is social to drink lean, and the media portrays it that getting high is fun.
Right.
And we get involved in getting high, never knowing what's going to develop within us.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a emotion. I don't know how to emotionally react.
Right.
To life situation and coping skills. When I get the drugs and alcohol in me, I become the person that I think I really want to be.
Right.
And so now I'm cool. I become the drug dealer that I really think I want to be, and I can really slang more because I used to slang crack cocaine
right.
in 1982. I don't know when cocaine actually came out, but back then it was in powder form.
Right.
You sold it in powder form. They right. do all the busy rocking it up themselves. And as I'm selling this cocaine, and I'm seeing people coming to the spot, and they're dressed nice, and they coming from work, and then I'm starting to see them months later coming looking like, what didn't happen to
what
you?
What happened,
right.
yeah.
You know, and I would tell myself I would never mess with this drug.
Right.
Right, and I started off messing with marijuana and alcohol, hearing that it was a gateway to other drugs, but right. I just wouldn't believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, I began to use other drugs, Sherm.
Right.
Love Sherm. Just didn't like to move.
Why you pointing at me and
say Sherm? I never heard anybody say they love Sherm. I just heard right. it made them do things that they just right. wouldn't normally right. think they could do and turn brothers into supermen that they were not.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it goes down deep and it fills this hole, this emptiness that I really have inside of me that I think is really filling it up. It gives me a
right.
sense of ease and comfort.
But then right. after a while, it doesn't even fill up that hole that you thought you were filling.
Right.
You feel worse.
Right.
You feel worse off afterwards. You know, you're just smoking and you're drinking, and while you're smoking and you're drinking, you're just crying because you're like, why can't I stop doing this?
Right.
It just has full control over you.
Yes.
You know, and
yeah.
it's that unmanageability that he's talking about, that I'm unable to manage my emotions. You can tell me boo and I'm crying
right.
because I'm just so messed up emotionally inside, and that's where the problem is. And I've learned that, you know what, that I've had this problem before I even started using drugs.
That's what I was going to say. I'll point my finger like that. I was going to say that
yeah.
whatever issues I have before I use drugs, that's the issue I have. And so what I'm doing is actually covering up how I really feel.
Mm-hmm.
So when I go, like, say, for example, I'm giving myself an example. I don't have a father.
Mm-hmm. Right there.
He moved on. My dad moved on. He's a great man. He got another family. He's doing whatever he's doing, but he's not there with me and my brother. I feel
right.
a certain kind of way. We don't have pagers and cell phones when I'm growing up.
Right.
He say, he coming on Saturday, he ain't there.
Exactly.
How am I feeling? I'm feeling depressed.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that to my mother. Can't say it to my brother.
Right.
So I go out on the block. I'm depressed.
Right.
The people who love me, you know what they're going to say? Dip this,
take
pull
a hit.
On in it twice,
right.
And you're going to feel all right.
You ain't going to care about, you're going to be butt naked on the freeway. You ain't going to care about no daddy. Right. You know, so what I'm doing is covering up how I actually feel. Masking. Let me talk about suicide real quick. Yes. I'm suicidal.
Right.
But I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to slip my wrist or shoot myself in the head. What I'm going to do is I'm going to get so high and so messed up where I'm going out every day expecting to be dead. Mm-hmm. That's suicide.
Exactly. That's putting your life on the line, not caring what you do anymore, jumping in and out of cars if you be a woman or a man too. A man can do it too.
Right.
You know, and you know, getting in situations like knowing that you're going to go to jail, not caring. You know, you get to the point where you just don't care.
The drugs take that sensibility away from you, where you don't care what happens to you in that moment. They could kill you right now, and I'm dead. Okay, it's all right. You know, as long as I have my drugs before I leave. You see, and so it's such a dirty, dirty trick. And what really makes it vicious is that it was a poison. A poison. We didn't realize it was a poison because the money was coming in. Right. The money was coming in. And you have to look at a picture like Scarface that says, never use your own product.
Right. But now RR, I believe RR was coming from a different perspective.
Scarface, though.
Mm-hmm. Right. Not the money. What were you about to say?
But just like you said, I come up in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And in the 60s, if your parent, your mother was on AFDC, the man was not allowed to be in the house.
There it is.
So I'm the oldest man there. You know, I'm dark-skinned. Plus, you know, low self-esteem. Mm-hmm. So if I don't have somebody to go to tell me what to do from here, so I'm going to go hang out with Skip and Terrence, right? Because they got the solution, man.
Well, because you're men, you're black men, you're in the same circumstances. We have always clung to each other for those kind of solutions. You know, that's really the power of the black nation that we've lost. It's because there was nobody there to help us.
But look what he's saying. Look who he said he's going to. He done admitted to smoking everything, and I done drank everything. Right. So I'm going to get him drunk. He going to get him high. Right. Don't come to us.
The whole point
is because
of our condition, we have a natural addictive spirit in some of us, really. It can be food. It can be cigarettes. It can be drugs. It can be alcohol.
So let me ask you something.
Trying to anesthetize that hurt.
Was your father in the house?
Yeah.
It seemed like you were a person that had both parents.
I was fortunate.
Slavery or what have you.
Mm-hmm. They were in the builder generation in the black community coming up from that slavery, trying to prove that we could. So they were a part of the civil rights movement and all of that. Mm-hmm. So I got the best of that. And that's what I bring here.
So I got a chance to see the other side. We didn't have that. So we had to find love. Where really there was no love at. This is what they're doing in the hood.
Right,
you know, in the hood, you never want to be labeled as a poo-butt punk or a sissy, so you're going to gravitate to what they're doing.
But look at it this way. They dropped that drug in our poverty.
In our poverty,
in our devastation, in the absence of the father in the home. Mm-hmm. Like Skip said, it's not welfare, it's farewell. Farewell, daddy.
It's simply what Skip was like saying, too, it's a cover up. So drugs and alcohol became a solution to solve all the problems that I had inward.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then like Roddy was saying earlier, I was in triple darkness, meaning I was in the dark, ignorant in the mind, the body, and the spirit. Now, first of all, and I think that he did mention the 12-step, we're not here to shove it on anybody, but we do advocate the 12-step process because that's where we seek our freedom from. And in there, we learned that over a period of time, what had developed within me to drugs and alcohol is an allergic reaction. There was a doctor that told the co-founder that maybe you have an allergic reaction that sets off this phenomenon of craving, meaning I can't explain why once I take a hit of some marijuana, I can't put it down like the homies put it down. I can't put the Miller High Life down and continue to watch the football game. I got to keep drinking.
Right.
So I'm actually feeling something now that's beyond my mental control. Mm. I want to stop, but I can't stop. I don't want to be outside of the liquor store panhandling, asking, can y'all give me a quarter, which I've done.
Right.
Can I pump your gas for some change, which I've done. Going to any nymph to get the next hit. I don't want to do a whole lot of stuff, but now I have this thing inside of me that I do not know about, and I'm on one. And it only takes a higher power to relieve me from that, to arrest that.
That's what I wanted to ask you, what led into your recovery, and then I want to hear that same thing from you, too.
What led into my recovery, I'm going to tell you just like this. I ended up going to a treatment facility, not knowing that I had the problem that I had. you know. But I was out there, homicidal, suicidal, mm-hmm. and it didn't matter. And thank God for the treatment facility, because there, the 12 steps was introduced to me, mm-hmm. and I started to go through this, and I learned about, you know, me looking for love in all the wrong places. And to find love is within, but I didn't know that. You know, because when I was going to school, the teachers were telling me, well, I got mine, you need to get yours. Mm-hmm. You know, so right. I said to the streets at a very young age, you know, I'm the oldest guy in the family. I have six sisters and one baby brother. So, you know, if the father wasn't there, I left the house seeking for the job that I never got.
Right.
You know, so I got stuck in triple darkness, and it was either my way or the highway.
Yeah.
So thank God once again for the treatment facility, because I found out what I'm up against. I'm not up against the drugs or you guys. I'm up against myself.
Yes, sir. Right. Bless your heart. But isn't that a sickness that kind of we all kind of carry? Isn't that a sickness of black folks?
But we
that's
don't know.
We carry from birth. Well, we know
we
instinctively
know.
That there's something different
cool.
about
it. I had a long talk with this guy. I'm going to say his name, Jim Fallon. We just talked at Santa Monica College. He said there is something inside of our brain. Mm-hmm. That's there, and it's an innate ability to be either be addicted, to be a psychopath. There are certain things about the brain. He said he can do study and research and tell at the age of early age of 3 or 4 if you have addictive behaviors, if you're psychopathic, if all these behaviors, he says he can determine before the age of 5. Mm-hmm. And then he said, had this been, I'm going to say his name one more time, Jim Fallon, he said that in a perfect society, what would happen is we would remove that child from society, because eventually they grow up to be Hitler, they grow up to shoot up movie theaters, they grow up to do things to harm people. So I told him, do you believe that there is redemption? Do you believe that people can change? Because I'm an example of it. Mm-hmm. And he said, scientifically, no. So that means that what we have here on this stage right now, according to Jim Fallon, shouldn't exist. That we shouldn't have people who now have recognized, and once again, I'm sorry, you look 12, but she knows, you know, she knows that,
but
you know.
They,
but this is proof.
They
right
prove
here.
That Jim don't know everything.
Jim don't know
Jack. Jim don't know everything.
Jim don't know Jack.
How about that? There it is, and that's fair to say, because we've had to figure this out on our own. You see, because now you talked about the rehab center. Mm-hmm. How long was that?
I stayed there every bit of 6 months and 1 week.
6 months. Okay, how long ago was that? See, because when they first came out, they had 30-day rehabs, and people was just going in there, using up their insurance, coming back to the block and starting all over.
That was 11 and a half years ago. Back then, the recovery was raw and uncut. Mm-hmm. But today, what they have today is that, you know, the money being invested.
Okay, we have
to. People don't want to invest because the turnout of the fallen recovering alcoholic and addicts, right? There's no big amount, right?
We're going to talk about that after the break. Cause that's
so there's
very
no money. What he's saying, there's no
there's
money.
No money.
So people
money.
Stop when there's no money.
Yeah.
You know.
That's horrible. No, we have to keep going. We have to. That's why nonprofits are so important. Go ahead, sister.
That's right. Well, I was waiting for our break music. There it is. God bless your family and welcome back, because, you know, that theme music has a serious message in it, and we want our people to feel what it's like to be free.
Yes.
We done paid enough prices to the world and to this country. It's our turn to be free and just live as human beings. So I just want to thank you all for coming and sharing this. It's a very critical conversation, and we're going to keep on having it until we get our understanding straight. And so...
Sister, At 14 years old, I really want to know what was the turnaround for the young lady right here.
Absolutely.
Well,
tell us first, you're not 14.
No, I'm 23.
Thank you.
Okay.
Skip, you stop instigating. Stop that. Look, giving our kids a bad message.
No, well, what it was is that I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. Like, I grew up without a dad. My mom was an addict, too. Mm. She was victim to the same disease I suffer from.
Yeah.
And eventually, like, when she decided to get clean, it was too late. She wanted to be a parent, and I was the one who wasn't cooperative with it. And, like, eventually, I did what most of us do. I went out and I looked for love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I got into
all the
a
wrong
gang.
Places.
I went and got into a gang. I started gang banging, and I started going to jail when I was 14. In and out, I went to camp. And as soon as I turned 18, instead of graduating from high school, I graduated to the county.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, in and out of jail has been my story. You know, coming out, putting my life on the line, and I have jumped in and out of cars before. Mm-hmm. You know, messing with people's credit, doing things like that, you know?
Whatever you had to do.
Whatever I had to do.
It brings that lifestyle. Yeah. So, you know, we're not here to crucify you about that. It is what it is. And you went through all of that because of the madness that put you out there in that. And people need to hear what she said. The dysfunction in her home helped contribute to that. You see, to see your mother, and I've had a lot of young men tell me, that was the beginning of the turf war. It was really over their own mother. And it's like, oh, them homies over there got my mother over here working their block for those drugs. Well, I can't have my mom out there doing that. So I'm going to start selling the drugs to keep her home. And I've had ex-gang members tell me that was the genesis of the turf war. The genesis of the turf war behind the neighborhood, the women in it, based on the mothers, the sisters, and the money. You see? So we divided ourselves behind a dang drug that was killing us all. And look, killing our future, mm-hmm. killing our children with that image. What was she supposed to do, seeing her mother sick like that? Dad's not there, and mom's sick. How was she supposed to get her mind in the right place? You see? So we have to include all of that.
She did. So how did you do it?
She has now.
Yeah, so how did you do it?
How did I do it?
Because she's still young. So
yeah, she is.
Well, what happened was that, like, I was really, really bad on drugs already. And I was to the point where I didn't care. That's why I mentioned earlier where I got to the point where I didn't care if I was robbing people and doing different things, you know, that people retaliate for. Knowing that I'm putting my life on the line, and I ended up getting shot. And after I got shot, I still didn't stop. I can't even say that was it, because I continued to use. After that happened, and my little brother was in the hospital and he was dying of meningitis. He lived, but I couldn't get myself to go to the hospital. I just felt really that really right there just broke me down, and it was just like they say you're spiritually broken.
Yeah.
I was spiritually broken already. You know, because I've had this dysfunction from the gate, from when I was a kid.
Right.
You know, so I had to grow up quick. So I guess you could say that my downfall with drugs was a little bit quicker than it was for somebody who just started using, like when they hit, you know, their teen years or whatever. I was spiritually broken from the beginning.
Right.
You know, yeah. So I hit my downfall quicker than a lot of others. And I just remember, like, praying out to God while I was smoking that, like, I'm done. Like, I don't want to do this no more. I just don't know how. And the only way that I knew that I was going to stop was going to jail. Mm-hmm. So I put myself in a situation knowing I was going to go to jail, and I went to jail, and God saved me. Mm-hmm. You know?
That's a blessing.
Let me.
Please.
I want to elaborate on that, because I had a very loving mom. I had a very loving mom, and she taught me morals and values. But the happiness I found, it was in the streets.
It was in the streets.
It was in the streets. At the age of 13, I turned to the street, you know, in search of love.
Right.
You know, but my mother was doing the best that she could with me. Right. So I can't say that my family was dysfunctional. It's mm-hmm. me that's dysfunctional. Right. I can't get along with people, places, and things. So I run to the streets for love. You know,
yeah.
I'm a part of the project, Nickerson Garden. So over in that area, you don't never want to be labeled as a pooper, a punk, or a sissy. So you have to get out there and be the man that you are. You know, get out where you get mad at. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is about. You know, the president, back in them days, that wouldn't allow the father to be in the family.
Right.
Right. You know, we right. could blame it on them, but it's just the disobedience, right? Mm-hmm. Because had I to follow what my mother would taught me, maybe, just maybe, I wouldn't even be here.
Well,
so you know, I'm in search of something, and what I was in search of found out it was in me all the time.
Right. And you know, in fairness to what you just said, Skip, we hit on that very lightly. Welfare was farewell dad. And that system in itself fractured our homes.
Mm-hmm.
Fractured our homes because we're coming up from slavery. And this is why we call it family business, because black folks that don't realize we are related to each other because of slavery are ignorant or just foolish or both. But the point is, it is more family than stranger.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we were trying to come up, build a family after welfare, in segregation, where your dad couldn't get a job to pay for you.
Right.
Let me finish that thought.
But see, he said dad wasn't there, too.
No, dad wasn't there. Okay. But see, this is a point. This is what drove dad out of our scenario, mm-hmm. is welfare. Mm-hmm. I can't get a job and pay for my family, so the government's going to give my wife and my children money to take care of them as long as I'm not there.
Right.
As long as I'm not there. And that was the condition that right. broke the back of the black family right there.
Right.
We'll take care of your kids. You can't get a job. You lazy. So listen. You black, whatever it is.
Okay.
You can't get a job. So we step in, take care of your baby's mamas and your babies as long as you disappear.
Right.
You see, so that notion was set up in our men. Your wife can do better without you.
Right.
The government to take care of her.
So listen to what Rodney said and listen to what Terrence said. Okay. Both of them took responsibility, saying that, okay, not the system, not anything, this was my choice,
right.
which I agree upon. In 12 Steps and also Second Call, right. we all say self-responsibility.
Right.
But it's like taking a bath and putting on the same dirty clothes. Mm-hmm. Because if I change my mentality, if you guys go through the greatest program there is,
right.
but you go back into the environment that don't support that change,
right.
and then the perception that society has on you is still the same, then you are you're in a game, like you said earlier, you're in a game and you guys don't even know the rules and you don't know the game is against you.
Right.
You can take responsibility, but the bigger picture, the bigger game is what you started with. The fact that they are sending the drugs in here
right.
and they're not changing the environment you in.
No.
So you've changed the way you think.
Right.
You've changed the people that you hang around. You've changed doing whatever you were doing. But they still sending the same people and the same drugs to talk to you. And
right.
then right there, police will still see you and think of you 7 years ago or 5 years ago. Police will see you and say, he hasn't changed. And the same with you.
Mm-hmm.
So, myself included. So what we're doing is taking a bath and putting on the same dirty clothes. We have to change this environment and society, the way they view us.
Well,
the
I also want to ask, too, in this, how much did your friends play a factor in your engagement? Did they play any part at all? You said these were your decisions, but when you came out of your mom's home, you went to the corner and found what?
Ego and pride.
Ego and pride.
You know, I'm looking to be respected, and by all means necessary, I'm going to get respected.
Mm.
And that's what's taught. Get down where you get mad at.
Mm.
You know, do that person before they do you.
Right. But when you didn't have that.
When you're in the streets.
When you're in the streets.
When you're in the streets.
Yeah.
And I apologize, but that's what I do. I live the streets.
You know what? You're not by yourself.
The cold, so the cold in the streets is how to survive in South Central.
Right.
Rule number one, don't trust nobody. So I go around the world trusting nobody.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Then I come back to believe that it is some good people to trust.
Yeah.
But you had to find them.
That's true. See, because you know what? The point is, we are so connected to this. We had friends that were engaged. We had friends that were addicted. We had friends that were distributors.
Mm-hmm.
We had family that got caught up. We had neighbors that caught up. And it just crossed all of our lines in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
Every last one of them. My neighborhood isn't any different from yours.
Or any different from
it's the same.
They're on the same.
Well, you know, but you know what I mean.
Right.
It just happened all over our communities to set up these internal wars against each other. And what was the war about? Drugs and money.
Right.
Respect and money.
Living for the hood, right?
Yeah.
And I have a lot of nephews that I taught what was taught to me. you know.
But your mama didn't teach you that.
Had I known better, then I would have taught better.
Who taught you that? See, this is your mom didn't raise you that way. You went out and made these decisions with other peers.
I said that my mother gave me more than value.
Yeah.
Right? And I took to the street.
Yeah.
So I learned the street way. So I taught my nephews them the street way. And yeah, that's, you know, I lived a stupidity life for a while.
That's fair. That's fair. I'm not condemning you for that. The point is, your dad wasn't there to teach you what being a man is because welfare said farewell, all right, to too many of our fathers. And we have our girls out here looking for love in the wrong places for the same reasons. Mm-hmm. And so I tell black fathers, you matter because you're the one that's going to keep her off the pole. Mm-hmm. So don't kid yourself. A half a dad is better than none. A little bit of a dad is better than zero. Mm-hmm. But the system was not here for you. Right. It was not here for your father. It was not supporting that black family being a black family. It's like you can't get a job because of your color. We're not going to hire you because of your color. Got nothing to do with what your skills and abilities are. We're not going to hire you. How does he feed his family? You see, my parents, uncles, aunts went through this. Mm-hmm. I saw them do this to my uncle, and my uncle turned into an alcoholic because he had six kids. Two of them died in the war, one of them in World War II and the other one in the Korean War. So he lost two of his six kids and couldn't get a job. He turned into an alcoholic. Government came over, took care of my aunt, and the four kids left. See, so that's how they were raised in the welfare. Because of that. They had a father. He was working until he lost that job. You see, so we have to admit that our fathers are gone for a reason, starting with welfare, followed up by crack, well, followed up with unemployment, then crack and drugs.
But I want to refocus, though, back on again that I've had friends who didn't have both parents. Father in prison, mother was on drugs and alcohol, but they didn't take the road that I took.
They didn't.
They continued to go to school. They worked. They got a professional job and everything. And you were saying how my friends, I was taking it as you were saying, do they support me in this movement or are they looking at me differently? And for me, I believe in what I see and from my experiences that they support. Because they rather see me trying to better myself than to go backwards because they see me do 10 treatment facilities. And like I said, I didn't know what I was up against until this last experience that I had. And going through that, like he said, I changed, right, and changed my way. So they're watching. And then also I know and I've learned that they also want to change. People are tired of the bank. They're tired.
They are.
Yeah.
And they really don't want to be out there doing the things that they do. And they're really tired.
Yes.
Some confront when I got the attitude of I don't care, it's me against the world. But deep down inside, I know because you would automatically just go do what you got to do and just get it over with.
Right.
So I know others want to see a change, but many do not want to start in the beginning and do the footwork.
Right.
Unless when it becomes something successful, everybody's ready to jump in. But the hard part in the footwork, nobody too much wants to do, or we don't as a whole have the faith in it or don't believe in it until we see it and see if we and its motive.
But that's very true what you're saying, see, because this is why I was asking you about your recovery. In the beginning of this, nobody knew what they were dealing with and didn't understand the depth of the addiction.
And
you could talk about that.
You know,
see, because the rehabs weren't there and they were only 30 days to eat up your insurance and send you back out. And 90% re-addicted. Okay, and until they brought in the six-month program, lock you away from your community, your familiar territory, there was no chance for recovery. And I've even seen young women that came out after that 6 months come back to their old neighborhood.
Back to the neighborhood. But since we're talking about drug and alcohol, do we know what the number one drug is?
Alcohol, I would
No, ma'am. The number one drug is silence. That is the number one drug. People see something and they don't talk about it.
Right.
And that kills more people than anything.
You're right.
So what I would like to do is just put a shout out that people that are listening to this right now, there is help all around the world. If you reach out, you can come from darkness to the light. Mm-hmm. If you're looking at me.
And I want you to be sure to give your contact information at the end of the show, but I want to bring you in here because you're young. You have that fresh experience of this, and I want you to speak to your peer group.
Well, I just wanted to piggyback first on what Terrence said earlier, that how some of his friends didn't have a mother or a father, and they didn't fall into this addiction. Mm-hmm. And I could say that's true because I come from a family of 11. My mom had 11 kids. Mm-hmm. I have a brother and sister that passed away. It's 9 of us living, but out of all 9 of us that are living, not all of us became addicted. Mm-hmm. So it really does just vary on the person.
Yeah,
you know, unfortunately, I'm one who fell victim to this addiction too. And
well, you were hurt.
Yeah, I was hurt.
People take drugs to anesthetize. That's why we drink, because something is hurting us, and I'm a drink, so I get rid of that feeling.
That's true to some extent, but there's something that I suffer from, and it's an allergy, because my brothers and sisters, they were hurt too. Not all of them are smoking and drinking like I did.
Right.
You know? So it you can't really just say that only people, because everybody hurts. Everybody feels pain.
I'm not going to say everybody feels pain, see, because I know some people is rolling large and in charge, and they ain't worried about nothing, but they don't look like us. Okay, see, so we just have to be real about the madness that consumes so many of us and costs us so much. So I'm not charging you with anything. Foul doing or none of that. We're just trying to get an understanding of what happened to us
what
and
the
road away from it.
What I hear is, speaking for yourself,
yes,
what was your journey and what was the healing process for you, and not, you know.
I'm still in my healing process. Okay. But what started it off was me getting saved from the streets. I went to jail. And when I went to jail, I had the option. Well, I requested the option instead of, because I didn't have a drug case, but I requested to go to a program because I had tried getting clean one time before, and I wasn't ready though. I didn't know that I wasn't ready the first time. And the first time I tried to get clean and still keep my hood. I still try to keep that ego and pride. Right. I tried to keep that, and I had to get my ego and pride smashed.
Right.
You know, and I had to put all that to the side because I still thought that I knew something. So I went to the program. When I went to the program, what I did and what I've been doing is listening. I listen to other people who have been through this experience just like me, you know, people who have time. And that's what I'm doing right now. And I continue to do that with my sponsor, Terrence, you know, and I meet up with him every Saturday for a big book study. And we go through the big book of AA, and I just follow his direction to pray, because at the end of the day, that's really what I'm disconnected from, is from my higher power. And mm-hmm. even though I'm separated from the drugs, I'm still stuck in triple darkness. Mm-hmm. And triple darkness is living, is an ignorant course of life.
Right. Try to find your way to the light, and that's fair, especially considering where you're coming from. You know, and I'm not really trying to condemn anybody in your scenario. It's just a reality. The reality of what brought you to that door. And there's no condemnation in it. It's just a reality that we accept that each one of us had a different reason for crossing that bridge. Mm-hmm. Okay? And if we get back to that pain, in the admitting that there was some pain comes the healing. You see, and I wanted to ask you, because you had a mother that gave you some standards and stuff, and you went out in the street and found a new standard from your peer group. So what brought you back to your senses?
It got to be God.
God, okay.
When I talk about the treatment facility, because that is where I was able to get quiet and listen to some people that was coming in, sharing some hope about a new way of living. Because he spoke about it earlier, the suicide and the homicide. I'm killing myself slowly, but I don't even know it.
Don't even know it.
But that treatment center turned out to be the best thing for me, because there I found out what I was up against in dealing with the alcoholism. It is not the alcohol and the drug itself. It is the alcoholism, things that I do before, while in, and after I take a drink or something.
Right.
And all I want to do is just be love.
Right.
Once again, I'm searching for love.
And that alcohol loved you, didn't it? It didn't give you no hard time, did it?
Alcohol.
The liquor store man loved to see you coming, didn't he?
It took me on my comfort zone.
We got to tell the truth about this. You know, I understand because my Uncle Charles turned into a full-time alcoholic. Yeah. That's how devastated he was. And he didn't have the capacity to take care of his kids anymore or his wife. He just gave his life to that because he was so hurt. And as a black man, I witnessed that, and I understand that deep pain. What's wrong with me?
You know,
how come
sister,
I just can't get in opportunity like everybody else?
A funny story. This dude had wrote on the wall, Vicki Lindsay's office in Compton. This guy wrote on the wall. His name was Midget. He wrote his name on the wall, gangbanging and stuff. So I was asking people. I was like, who is Midget? He got to stop doing this. Who is Midget? And one of the guys, came by, and he said, man, he wrote his name on the wall. Well, I don't see how he's still gangbanging when he gave his life, and I thought he was about to say to God or to Jesus. He said he gave his life to drugs. And I was like, wow. So where most of us say, well, I'm giving my life to God, there are people who actually give their life to drugs.
Right. Yeah.
And that was one of them like aha moments. Like I was waiting. I didn't know if he's going to say Jesus, God, Allah, or whatever. But I was waiting. And he said, why would Mitch do that when he don't gangbang? He gave his life to drugs.
He gave his life to drugs. Right.
And I was like, wow.
And see, and I know a lot of folks that did that. They gave everything up that they had. Years ago when we were in the training for this, and I knew a man that was a master mechanic until he hit that crack pipe for the first time. And he just gave away everything to where he was sleeping in cars. Anybody had an open car at night, he'd ask if he could stay there. His grown daughters, 18 and 21, came down to the neighborhood to beg their dad to come home with them, let them help him in recovery, let them help him. These were his daughters. He told them no. No.
Right.
And the last time I saw him, which was 2 years ago, he's still on the street doing the same thing.
That's right. Because this disease doesn't care about anybody, and especially not about about you.
There it
has no respect for anybody.
Doesn't care what color you are.
Not only that, it's comfortability, you know, in that. You know, like downtown, man, they comfortable down there.
Well, let's talk about that big drug bust they had just a few days ago, and this man's been dealing drugs in the homeless community for 30 years. Come on, stop playing with us.
What impact is that going to make?
The people downtown won't have the drugs that kept them under control for the last 30 years.
I don't believe that.
To keep them out of your neighborhood.
I don't believe that.
Oh, Skip,
I believe
that.
Now, listen, do they still have drugs downtown?
Yep.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. So this drug bust did something for LAPD and FBI.
There it is.
It got them their picture in the paper and get to say that we are working.
Because drugs are still going to be there.
But I guarantee you that the system, once again, is taking a bath and putting on the same dirty clothes.
That's right.
Because now all these people downtown are going to be paying more for their drugs until it comes back.
And not just that. It's just that's how the streets go. There's always somebody waiting to take your spot. Just like that person is out of the streets now, there was somebody waiting to take his spot.
I guarantee you, go down Fifth and San Julian.
There's like two, three of them.
They out there like zombies, like the Walking Dead.
What's the big event? What's the big event that's coming up?
I'm not sure.
Because they're doing a whole lot of building downtown.
Oh, they're gentrifying. They're gentrifying down there. So they're going to clean up Skid Row.
So look what we done, right? Look what we done to get the media. Right? If somebody is applying for a grant, they get the grant, they don't give a damn about the rest of them.
Right.
Well, you can't get the grant. We already talked about that before we went on the air because we don't have any grant writers. So, you know.
They're going to get some kind of grant down there.
Well, you know, downtown.
They got a big bus, so they get
take
10%
care of themselves.
Of that money, right?
The point I want to make is that this man was distributing drugs downtown for 30 years, and you mean to tell me you just found him? Come on.
Right.
You need to stop playing
with
us.
They've been watching him, they just been waiting.
For 30 years, they've been doing more than watching
and waiting. I find it hard to believe.
I do, too.
I find it hard to believe.
It's impossible.
It's power in the game.
Well, when you talk to people that live down in Skid Row and they tell you drugs is common around here, you can go to any corner you want to. You can go to some places where it's always there. And then they have people that live in some of those places.
Right.
Oh, it's time to wrap up. Oh, God bless you.
Well,
can we see the baby?
Well, I didn't hear Maurice White. Maurice always said, let me tell y'all something real quick before y'all hear. keep your head to the sky.
There it is.
Thank you.
All right.
There it is. All right. Well, we wanted to get the baby on the air, right, but we'll get her on next time, bless her heart, because she wanted to be in this conversation too, representing for her mommy and her daddy.
Did you hear over there saying, da-da?
Yeah.
Da-da.
See, I got so many kids, I turned around, I thought
that's
it was for me.
That's all she says, da-da.
I was like, oh, no, I don't have no more baby.
Thank you all for coming.
Thank you.
Glad you got here.
Thank you. I just jumped in, didn't know what I was talking about at first. I was like.
All right. You did what you
we
did.
Always got something we can talk about.
Yeah, where you at?